Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 4, text 11, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Please chant after me, those of you who know the verse. Ye yata mang prapadyante. Tangs tathaiva bhajamyaham. Nama vartmanu vartante. Anushyaf Partha Saravashaha. Anyone else like to chant? All right, well, I'll chant it one more time then. Ye yata mang prapadyante.
Tang tathaiva bhajamyaham.
Mama vartmanu vartante. Nanushyaf Partha Saravashaha. All of them, as they surrender unto me, I reward accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pita. All of them, as they surrender unto me, I reward accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha. A well-known verse. Purport. Everyone is searching for Krishna in the different aspects of His manifestations. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is partially realized in His impersonal Brahma Jyoti effulgence, and as the all-pervading Supersoul dwelling within everything, including the particles of atoms. But Krishna is only fully realized by His pure devotees. Consequently, Krishna is the object of everyone's realization, and thus anyone and everyone is satisfied according to one's desire to have Him. In the transcendental world also, Krishna reciprocates with His pure devotees in the transcendental attitude, just as the devotee wants Him. One devotee may want Krishna as Supreme Master, another as his personal friend, another as his son, and still another as his lover. Krishna rewards all the devotees equally according to their different intensities of love for Him. In the material world, the same reciprocations of feelings are there, and they are equally exchanged by the Lord with the different types of worshippers. The pure devotees, both here and in the transcendental abode, associate with Him in person and are able to render personal service to the Lord and thus derive transcendental bliss in His loving service. As for those who are impersonalists and who want to commit spiritual suicide by annihilating the individual existence of the living entity, Krishna helps also by absorbing them into His effulgence. Such impersonalists do not agree to accept the eternal blissful personality of Godhead. Consequently, they cannot relish the bliss of transcendental personal service to the Lord, having extinguished their individuality. Some of them who are not situated even in the impersonal existence return to this material field to exhibit their dormant desires for activities. They are not admitted to the spiritual in the spiritual planets, but they are again given a chance to act on the material planets. For those who are fruitive workers, the Lord awards the desired results of their prescribed duties as the Yageshwara. And those who are yogis seeking mystic powers are awarded such powers. In other words, everyone is dependent for success upon His mercy alone, and all kinds of spiritual processes are but different degrees of success on the same path. Unless, therefore, one comes to the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, all attempts remain imperfect, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Akama kar sarva kama va. Moksha kama udara dihi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Whether one is without desire, the condition of the devotees, or is desirous of all fruitive results, or is after liberation, one should, with all efforts, try to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead for complete perfection, culminating in Krishna consciousness. Om Jnanati Nirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. Vande Guru Nisha Bhaktangs Isham Ishavatarakam Tat Prakasham Satat Shakti Krishna Chaitanya Sangraham Ajana Lambata Bhujo Kanakavatato Sankirtanai Kapitano Kamalaya Taksho Vishwambharo Dvijabharo Yoga Dharma Pala Vande Jagat Priyakuru Karunavataro Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nittananda Sahodito Guru Diye Pushtavanto Chitro Shando Tumanda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare
Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, spoke this Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna 5,000 years ago during his appearance in this world, which he kindly makes personally in his original form as Krishna. Lord Krishna kindly comes to this world once in a day of Lord Brahma, which by our calculations is a long time, and by his calculations in his form as Karana Dakshai Vishnu is very little, because the whole life of Brahma is only in one breath of Mahavishnu. So Krishna comes, he speaks Bhagavad Gita, he shows his pastimes. That he reciprocates with his devotees is demonstrated in his pastimes. That he reciprocates with Arjuna, who is the great friend of Krishna, is shown by Lord Krishna's becoming Parthasarathi, the chariot driver of Arjuna. Generally, a friend would not become a chariot driver. That's considered a lower position for a kshatriya. In Indian society, even today, people are very conscious of prestige and position. A university graduate will not like to do manual labor, although in the Western countries there's no such restriction like that, or no, there's no social convention against university graduates doing manual labor. But in India, even today, if someone thinks, well, I'm educated, I shouldn't do work like that. So Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears as Dwarakadhish, the ruler of Dwaraka. So it was not expected that he would become a chariot driver, because that's considered the work of people of lower caste. Karna was often taunted by the Pandavas as Sutaputra in Bhagavad Gita, that's also given, the son of a chariot driver, because he was known like that. Actually, he was the son of Kunti by the sun god. He lost them. Okay. But circumstantially, he became known as the son of a chariot driver, which is, so that was an insult to him. So it was insulting. Recently in Tamil Nadu, there was one devotee who was driving me to a program. So after the program, I said in a, not a demeaning manner, in a manner which was supposed to be endearing. You know these two words? They're the opposite, demeaning and endearing. I said, where is our driver? And afterwards I heard he'd become very upset because I'd referred to him as a driver, because he thought that was below his... He was driving me, but he thought that was below his dignity to be referred to as a driver, which he thought, well, I'm a driver. Driver is someone you hire. That's... And I say devotee, I mean, devotee shouldn't be so petty-minded, but he was. So it's just an example of how even today the idea that I'm of a higher status than that. In Bengal, if you might ask someone that, well, what service does your father do? Oh, he doesn't do service. He has his own business. It might be a hole in the wall shop for selling cigarettes and pan, but it's his own business. I'm not working for anyone. Of course, that concept has changed in modern Indian people proudly announce that, well, I'm working for a multinational corporation. I'm earning 50,000 rupees a month. And working for some beef eaters. It's the concept of prestige has changed, but still it's there. Very prestige conscious. So anyway, all this is tangential to the point that Krishna has consented to become the chariot driver of Arjuna out of extraordinary friendship. Extraordinary because, it might be considered below his dignity, but Krishna is more attached to his devotees than to his dignity. His dignity is there. Krishna's dignity is there, but he is more attached to upholding his devotees' dignity. If Krishna had not been the chariot driver of Arjuna, then Arjuna would certainly not have been able to have been, as Krishna told him, nimittavatra bhavasavyasachin. He wouldn't have been able to act as the instrument of Krishna in winning the war. After the war was over, after the battle was over, Krishna told Arjuna, get off the chariot now. Just get off and go a little distance away. So Arjuna had been giving orders to Krishna, and now Krishna was giving an order to Arjuna. And they both got off, and then the whole thing went up in flames. And Krishna explained that by my potency, there were so many weapons thrown at your chariot, by my potency I was making them not ignite. So now they ignited. That means that we hear about the battle being fought with bows and arrows, and it might sound like some kind of jungle tribals or something, but actually they were very sophisticated weapons which were powered by mantra. So that certain mantras would be uttered, and the arrow would there would be fire weapons and water weapons and sound weapons and all different kinds of weapons produced. This technology is not known nowadays. So Krishna shows by his pastimes how he reciprocates with everyone. There is narrated in Srimad Bhagavatam how when Krishna was a little toddler, Krishna is not a little toddler, Krishna is always the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but to give pleasure to his devotees, he takes the form or he manifests different pastimes. For Mother Yashoda, he is eternally a little boy. So Krishna, apparently as a helpless little boy, the same Krishna who in his apparent helplessness had killed the terrible demon Putana and so many others, but was now looking like a helpless little boy. He was in the courtyard of his home, and a fruit seller came, fruit vendor, with a basket of fruits, and a tribal woman with fruit gathered from the forest, and she brought it. And Krishna had seen his mother that when such fruit sellers came, she would give some grains in barter. This paper money came into existence much later. And so there was the barter system was there. So they would give some grains and they would take some fruit. So Krishna had seen this, and his mother was maybe somewhere else at that time. So imitating his mother, he went to the stock of grains and brought whatever he could carry in his tiny little hands. But because he was not very articulate, or because he was a little child, as he toddled along clumsily, just able to walk, with his fingers open, most of the grains fell out. So there was hardly any grains left to give. But the fruit vendor, the woman, being charmed by the beauty and the charm of Krishna, filled up his little hands with as many fruit as little Krishna could carry. And Krishna, playing like a helpless toddler, turned all the remaining fruit in the basket of the fruit vendor into valuable jewels. So this was a reciprocation of Krishna, that the fruit vendor, Krishna here says, I reciprocate accordingly, but if God reciprocates, he can give us much more than we can give him. She came to give fruit and was charmed by the beauty of Krishna. And out of affection, natural motherly affection that women will have toward children, she wasn't a big scholar of philosophy or of anything. She was an illiterate woman who collected fruit in the forest, and in this went to the villages and got some grains, you know, in reciprocation. But although she didn't know Krishna was the Supreme Lord, he was. And Krishna reciprocated in a manner that she could not imagine that she would get such valuable jewels in return. Now, valuable jewels can be a source of, or wealth in general, can be a source of much misery. People in general don't realize that. They think, well, if we get money, we'll be happy. But often wealth is far from being the cause of happiness, it's the cause of distress. For instance, some years ago, I saw a story that in England, a Pakistani family, one young man of Pakistani descent, had bought a lottery ticket, and he won £1 million. And in such traditional-based families, everything is shared by everyone. The sorrows and the distresses. But he said, forget it, it's my money. And that he forgot the rest of the family, which caused them much distress. Then, apart from losing the money, which they thought, now we got money, but they didn't get it. So they felt distressed from not getting the money which they thought they would get. And they also felt the distress of their son or their family member rejecting them for the sake of money. So there's an example of how money causes distress. But the jewels that this forest tribal lady got, they were given by Krishna in reciprocation for her affectionate feeling toward him. So we cannot imagine that that would have been the cause of any distress, because everything that Krishna does is all auspicious for everyone. Sometimes what Krishna gives is the cause, it apparently is the cause of distress. Often, actually, Krishna appears to be a source of distress. Just like we see here some young men coming to hear about Krishna. So if some of the unmarried young men decided that, well, I like this very much, this Krishna consciousness, I'm going to join the ashram as a brahmachari. If it was married men, we wouldn't agree to that. But if it was a young man who was unmarried, we quite likely might do. Not in every case, we have to see the individual, but that often causes distress to the family, to the other family members who think that, well, my son went to Moscow and we had good hopes of him earning money and sending plenty of money back home. And instead, he came home with most of his hair missing. He betrayed us. He deserted us. We invested so much money in his education. This often happens. Not in India, all over the world. Young men join the ashram as brahmacharis and their parents are not happy. So for them, they see that Krishna has become a cause of their distress. Gandhari, she saw Krishna as a source of her distress. She said, it's because of you that all my sons have been killed. Actually, in one sense, that's true, because Krishna is sarva karana karanam. He is the cause of all causes. But as Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, purusha sukha dukhanam bhuktritve hetu ruchate. Krishna gives everyone a limited amount of independence, and the use or misuse of that is the cause of their happiness or distress. So Duryodhana himself was the cause of his death and that of his 99 brothers, actually 100 brothers. There was one more also by the Vaishya wife of Dhritarashtra. So they were all killed. That's why Vidur was warning when the child was born, kill him immediately. You find in the Mahabharata that child murder has been recommended in the case of Duryodhana. Kill him immediately. This child will bring about the destruction of your whole family. Better you kill him. But the advice was not heeded. So Gandhari, she blamed Krishna that you are the cause of the death of our whole family, our whole dynasty. So she said that your family will also be destroyed by this fratricidal law, intern sinning law. So later it was seen that the Yadu, just as the Kuru dynasty was destroyed by fraternal battle, so the Yadu dynasty was similarly destroyed. Does that mean that Gandhari is more powerful than Krishna? No. This has to be understood very carefully. Those who do not understand that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and how he reciprocates in what are the activities of his Leela, how he acts in some ways like an ordinary human being so that his Leela or his divine pastimes can be affected. This is a mystery. to non-devotees and even to many devotees, how Kunti Devi prays that it is astonishing how you, Krishna, who is feared by fear personified, is afraid of the whipping stick of Mother Yashoda, who is just a village woman. The same Krishna who killed so many demons who entered Vrindavan, terrible demons that even the demigods were afraid of, he became afraid of a little, what appeared to be an insignificant village woman. So this is his reciprocation. He's the Gandhari curse. Krishna upholds that and affects his leela, although he's not bound to it. He upheld Bhishma Dev's promise. Bhishma Dev promised that either tomorrow, he promised Duryodhana, when Duryodhana taunted him, that you are partial to the Pandavas. He said, Bhishma Dev said that tomorrow either I will fight so terrible that tomorrow either Arjuna will be killed or the only way he can live, because Bhishma is quite capable of killing Arjuna. Bhishma is a more competent fighter. So the only way Arjuna can live tomorrow is if Krishna breaks his promise. Only Krishna can defend him. If Krishna breaks his promise not to pick up any weapon, Krishna promised, I won't take any weapon in this battle. He didn't say I wouldn't take part in the battle. He took part as the chariot driver and advisor of Arjuna. But he said, I won't personally handle any weapon. So Krishna says, Bhishma said that he'll have to break his promise. That's the only way Arjuna can live, if Krishna defends him. So Krishna, his promise not to pick up any weapon, he broke that promise to uphold Bhishma Dev's promise and keep Arjuna alive, because he was more interested in protecting his devotees than sticking to his promise. This is a higher morality. You may think, well, it's immoral, Krishna broke his promise. But the higher morality he has is to protect his devotees. And Krishna became glorious. He became glorified for that. Ratangapani. He became known by the name of one who has picked up, who has a chariot wheel in his hand, or part of a chariot wheel. That which would, for others to break their promise would be considered a desecration of duty, a violation of the moral codes. But everything Krishna does is glorious. The devotees of Krishna glorify him as Navanita Chora, the butter thief. They glorify him as Gopinath, the Lord of the Gopis, although persons who are adulterers, they accuse Krishna of being an adulterer. Once a Keralite who had a Christian challenged Srila Prabhupada, how can you worship as God someone who is an adulterer? Because Krishna is apparently an adulterer in relation with the gopis of Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada replied that everyone else except Krishna is an adulterer. Everyone who thinks, this is my wife, they are an adulterer, even if they're legally married. Because every woman is Krishna's. So from the ontological standpoint, if we think that this woman is to be enjoyed by me, or if you think anything in this world is to be enjoyed by me, then we are taking that which is meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. Of course, Krishna doesn't enjoy the material bodies of women or the material anything. The gopis are fully spiritual. Their bodies are not destructible bodies that appear to be very beautiful in this world. So many great beauties have come and gone. Famous beauties. I was just recently in Delhi. I was saying that I know the name of so many Indian film stars due to living in India. I don't watch the movies, but I said when I first came to India, Rekha was very famous. I said, probably no one has heard of her today. And said, yes, yes, they still know. They must be watching the old movies. So I said, but now Rekha must be having so much Rekha on her face. Rekha means line. So the same beautiful woman is no longer beautiful. So many beauties come and go. But the eternally beautiful couple are Radha and Krishna. So even to become beautiful, that's considered good karma. Janmaishvarya Shruta Shri, these are the four gifts or the four fruits of pious activities: to have birth in a high family, to be wealthy, to be beautiful, to be learned. But if one thinks, I am very beautiful, if a man thinks, I'm very good looking, and he's simply imitating Krishna. If a woman thinks, I'm very beautiful, or tries to decorate her body to be very beautiful, then it's simply an imitation of Srimati Radharani. The devotee is a servant of Krishna. Everything he does is for the service of Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates accordingly. If we have a little devotion for Krishna, Krishna will be happy with that. And if we have much devotion, he'll be much happier. If we give ourselves to Krishna, he gives himself to us. Now what can we give to Krishna? He is the source of everything. Aham sarvasya prabhavaha. So what shall we give to him? What can you give to someone who has got everything? What gift could you give to Bill Gates? Well, you give him Prabhupada's books. That would be a good gift. He already got some of them. But those who are not enlightened, they would have a hard time thinking what to give Bill Gates, and then maybe if they had to give him a gift. Probably you couldn't even give him a gift because he's too remote. How are you going to see him even? Such a rich man, you can't even, how are you going to even meet him or talk to him? He'll be protected by his security guards. But Krishna's not like that. He also has his security guards, but they protect him from unwanted people. But if we're, there's Maya is a security guard, and she doesn't allow us to approach Krishna unless we're sincere. But if we are sincere, Krishna is willing to interact with us. But what will we offer him? He says, Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhakti paritam ashnami prayatatma. I accept, Krishna says, if one offers me with bhakti, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, which are very insignificant things. That's one point. And another point is they're made by Krishna in the first place. But Krishna accepts the love with which they are offered. And Atma Prajanta Prasad. If we Atma Samarpan, Dikka Kale Bhakta Kare Atma Samarpan. At the time, initiation means the vow to surrender oneself fully to Krishna. And Krishna, if we give ourselves to Krishna, he gives himself to us. So that's very good, isn't it? Everyone likes big friends. People like to have, that's one way to get ahead in the world. You have to have good contacts. If you're in the business world, you know, you have to have good contacts. You minister this and minister that. And that's why all the businessmen know that you have to give money to the politicians, all of them. See, you can have, at the time of election, you have to give to the Congress and the BJP. And whoever comes in, they'll be just like one big Indian businessman in London. He told me, "Yeah, I can phone up the Prime Minister anytime, and the leader of the opposition also. When I phone up the Prime Minister, we make jokes about the leader of the opposition, and vice versa. And they'll both speak to me. I give them enough donations for their parties that they're both open. I have an open line to both of them. So he gets his job done. That's it. If you have big friends, you can get your job done. But the thing is, we can't bribe Krishna. That's where this similarity ends. Krishna knows our heart, and he can only be approached by love, by pure love. The simple village woman, not the village woman, forest woman, she got the opportunity to approach Krishna. She didn't know he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but nevertheless, she was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to approach him. Whereas Pantastu koti shatavatsara sampradamyo vayora tapi manaso muni pungavanam sopyasti yat pramada simya vinchincha tatve govindamadi purushantamaham vajami. That Supreme Lord who is so great that the yogis performing austerities and meditation for many millions of years cannot even begin to approach the tips of the toe of his lotus feet. Why is that? Because they have no devotion. Bhaktya mama vijanati. Krishna can be approached only by devotion. However, even if one has other motives than bhakti to Krishna, one can begin to approach him if there is even some semblance of devotion. Therefore, this verse is quoted here. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udara dhihi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. That whether one is a devotee without any material desires, or even if one is a devotee with material desires, or even if one is not much of a devotee at all, has lots of desires, or whether one desires liberation, whatever status one may be in, one should approach Krishna and worship him. How worship him? Tivrena bhakti yogena. Very forcefully, with great focus. Even if one has material desires, one can approach Krishna. And the result of that, if one worships Krishna with great focus and great concentration, then one will become purified of material desires and will desire only Krishna. One can only worship Krishna with great focus and determination if one has faith in the process of bhakti. If one has faith that by performing the process of bhakti, even if one has material desires, then that faith and in bhakti and application to the process will purify one of those material desires. The example is, there are many examples. One is that of Dhruva Maharaj, who, with great concentration, due to great determination, he followed the process of austerity and devotional service, because he had faith in the words of Narad Muni, and he had faith in the words of his mother to worship Lord Vishnu, and as a result, he was purified of his material desires. However, if in the name of bhakti one cultivates material desires and thinks that Bhagavan should serve me, then the result will not be pure devotional service. Even then it may be, if by the mercy of the pure devotees. But generally speaking, if one is cultivating material desires, then his bhakti can never fully manifest, because full manifestation of bhakti, that is the dharma of the jiva to love Krishna, which means fully giving oneself to Krishna, which means freedom from material desires. Anyabhila shuta shunyam jnana kama adyanavritam anukulyena krishna nushilanam bhakti uttama uttama bhakti means that in which consciousness of Krishna, Krishna's consciousness is cultivated without any personal desire for material enjoyment or intellectual speculation. That is first-class devotion. So are we all ready for that? All ready to give up our material desires? It's easier said than done, isn't it? Now I'm giving up all material desires. Wouldn't mind an ice cream, though. Oh, I have to offer it to Krishna. Wait a minute, it should be around the other way. What does Krishna want to eat? Let me offer to him. And then whatever prasad he gives, we shall take. That's the ideal platform. Well, there is the process of sadhana bhakti, in which we accept that the goal is to become free of material desires. And we don't deliberately cultivate material desires, but we tivrena bhakti yogena, we apply ourselves very seriously to the process of Krishna consciousness. And at the same time, by doing that, that means we don't indulge in gross sense gratification. And we try by hearing from devotees, we try to turn our consciousness around from that of I am the enjoyer of this world to that of I should act for the pleasure of Krishna. So this tivrena bhakti yogena, intense devotional service, it's not possible for us to perform bhakti with the same austerity that Dhruva Maharaj did. It was 6 months he was living on dried leaves only, and then he was living on air only, and then he stopped taking air also. And that's not possible. We can't do that. But we can follow the process given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in which we follow what Srila Prabhupada has translated in his Bhagavad Gita commentary, and we follow the regulative principles of freedom. And when people hear this, they think, well, that's contradictory, because if there are regulations, then where's the freedom? Regulation means that's restricting your freedom. People say, I want to be free, I don't want to follow any rules. But these are the regulated principles of freedom, because they free us. By following the principles of Krishna consciousness, we become freed from kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarya, lust, greed, anger, envy, illusion, and madness. We become freed from ahankar, ishvaraham aham bhogi, the false identification of ourselves being the controllers and the enjoyers of this world. We become free from the influence of the three modes of material nature. And we become free from birth, death, old age, and disease. So that's why it's called the regulated principles put us firmly on the path of freedom from all material bondage and all material miseries. So freedom for the jiva is to be the slave of Krishna. But the slave of Krishna, just like we were discussing so many examples, that to be the slave of Krishna is not like being the slave of Stalin or any such person who you don't know. You're trying to please him, but if you just sneeze at the wrong moment when he's in a bad mood, he might shoot you. Because he's whimsical and intrinsically not a very nice person. Whereas Krishna, with his devotees, his tendency is the opposite. If there's a little service, he accepts it as very great. And if there's some unintentional mistake, he tends to overlook that. So Krishna is a very good master to have. We should try to find a good master. We cannot be the master. That is our illusion, to think that I shall be the master. We are always controlled. Srila Prabhupada pointed out this time and time again. We are controlled. We don't choose to die, but we have to die. We don't choose to get sick, but we get sick. So we're controlled. So instead of being controlled by this illusory energy, better to come under the control of Krishna. And Krishna is very kind. We see he Atma Prajanta Prasad. He gives himself. His devotees are more important to him than he himself. So examples given in this talk of Arjuna, of Bhishma Dev, and as Srila Prabhupada used to quote his own father, that his father, who was a pure devotee, Gaur Mohan Dev, used to say that God has 10 hands and we only have 2. Of course, this is figurative because he has unlimited hands. He has sarvatah parnipadam tat. His hands and legs are everywhere. Yet in the Vedas it's also said aparnipado. He doesn't have any legs or hands, which means he doesn't have any material legs or hands, but he has spiritual legs and hands, and in his original form he has 2 hands. But he has as many hands as he wants, just like generally he has 2 hands, but when there was a disagreement between Bhima on one side and Yudhishthira and Draupadi on the other about whether or not Arjuna should cut off Ashwatthama's head, then Krishna got 4 hands because he was holding back Bhima on one side and Yudhishthira on the other. So of course Krishna doesn't have to hold him back with his hand. Just by his thought he can make anyone stunned. But as I was saying, this is all Krishna's pastime. So Prabhupada's father used to say that God has 10 hands and we only have 2. So if he wants to take anything away from us, how can we stop him? And if he wants to give us, how much can we accept? He can give us far more than we can imagine. But a devotee should always think that I have nothing. Whatever I have, that is all given by Krishna. So I should use everything in his service. Manasa deho geho jokichumo apiluntu apade nandakisho. This is the ideal attitude for a grihastha devotee. Instead of thinking, my home, my wife, my children, my bank account, my business, we should think everything is for Krishna. Now that doesn't mean we should be irresponsible. Thinking, well, it's all Krishna, so you know, let him look after it. The wife says, where's the money? And he says, well, ask Krishna. You know. No, he has to perform it more, even more responsibly. Knowing that everything is Krishna's, so he should look after it properly. It's like the temple, we should look after very nicely. How is it being kept clean? How is it being maintained? Because this is our service to Krishna. Krishna can maintain himself. He doesn't need our help. But as the deity, he appears to be helpless or in our care. In Hindu law, the deity is considered a minor, like a child who's under the care. Just like a child in law, his affairs are managed by, or the parent is responsible. So the deity, the land owned by the temple is owned by the deity, but that's under the administration of the temple priest or whatever, who's the guardian of the deity. So these are some of the intricacies of how Krishna reciprocates. But it's an exciting prospect. It's like I was saying, you have a big contact. You can't, if you have big contacts, just like at least in India, if someone, a policeman stops you and he wants to find you and you tell him, well, actually, I'm the brother of the Home Minister. He says, oh, okay, and lets you go because he's afraid that he'll get posted away from Delhi into some remote village in UP or something where there's not enough people to stop and take bribes from them. So, contacts. It's not who you are, it's who you know. Well, the biggest contact is Krishna. There's no one bigger than him. You may say, well, that's all right, but you know, when the policeman stops me and is saying that, well, I'm a devotee of Krishna, you may say, well, that doesn't matter, but either you pay the fine or give something to the policeman's chai fund or sharab fund or whatever it may be. So you may say, well, how does Krishna help me? So many people say, well, I took up the word, I took up bhakti, but then my problems became more. I thought Krishna would help me, but I got more problems. Sometimes it happens. Sometimes it happens, people take to bhakti and their business flourishes and they think this is wonderful. But someone who's more fortunate, they take to bhakti and all their material affairs become a mess. If they're really fortunate, they'll appreciate, oh, Krishna is showing me this material world is miserable. I should just surrender to him without any personal desire. That's Krishna's real mercy, if we're ready to take it. Lord Krishna tells, Yasyaham anugrihnami harishe tadhanam shanai. This is not a verse that we often say to people first time coming to Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna says that my mercy is manifested by taking away people's wealth gradually. So is it, oh, what, really? What do I want to worship Krishna for? But Krishna, to one who realizes that I have nothing in this world and I was thinking that it's my wealth, but it's not my wealth, I don't own anything, then to such persons Krishna gives everything. Gives everything means he gives himself, he gives love of himself, which is worth more than any millions and trillions of rubles. And he might give you lots of money also, maybe, maybe not. He reciprocates with different persons differently, but to a devotee it doesn't matter. If he has no money, he'll serve Krishna. If he has lots of money, he'll serve Krishna. If there's lots of money, he'll serve Krishna by building big temples and this and that. If he doesn't have lots of money, then he can serve Krishna just by chanting his name. So a devotee always sees the reciprocation of Krishna in everything. Sukhe, dukhe, same kritva, labha, labha, jayo, jayo. In all circumstances, whether we have lots of money or no money, or apparent good fortune, or we see it as the mercy of Krishna. If someone's in very good health, you see, this is the mercy of Krishna. Now I can serve Krishna very nicely. With good, healthy body, I can serve Krishna. If he's in very poor health, he thinks, this is the mercy of Krishna. Now Krishna is teaching me not to be attached to this body, that we have to give up this body. That is the pure devotional attitude. Is there any question, please? This is a very important verse, how we see Krishna's reciprocation always and everywhere. If we have this vision, then we'll always see Krishna in everything. Any question? Yeah, please.
Person who has taken to Krishna consciousness, how does he see that he's making progress? What are the symptoms of progress?
A person who's taken to Krishna consciousness, how does he see that he's making progress? What are the symptoms? Well, he may not see it himself, because a devotee doesn't think that I'm making progress. He thinks, a healthy attitude for a devotee is to think that I'm useless. I'm not. If he thinks, yeah, I'm making a lot of advancement, it may be, but to cultivate that attitude may not be very healthy. But on the other hand, symptoms of spiritual advancement are given in Shastra. That indifference to material difficulties, kshantihi, avyartha kala, not wanting to waste time because he wants to spend all his time serving Krishna. So various symptoms are given, and if we develop them, we can think that some advancement is there. But even then, one should, even if there are symptoms of spiritual advancement, we should think that this is all by the mercy of Guru and Vaishnavas. Should always think ourselves dependent. Always try to serve. So, it's a matter of becoming more and more absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and service to Krishna, and concomitantly, our absorption in material thoughts will decrease. That's the simple test. And that desire to serve Krishna should also be without any desire for personal recognition or any such thing. That can be another trap. That we're becoming more absorbed in service to Krishna, but we may not desire money, but we may desire that others will recognize me. That can also be a danger. Any other question? If not, then Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And if there is any other question, then also Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It's the perfect answer to all questions. And if there are no questions, it's the best thing to do also. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. So, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. 1 hour, almost. Every time I always speak, it's always just a little bit more or less than an hour, even without looking at the time, somehow. Yes? You have a question? Yeah. All right. Yeah, I can take a question. And the answer is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama, Hare Hare.
The question is false ego a friend of Maya or a husband of Maya?
Who is false ego? The husband of Maya is Shiva. Bhavani, Shivani. These names are the wife of Bhava, of Shiva. Umesh, name of Shiva, is the husband of Umapati. These are names. It's a kind of unusual question which we usually only get in Russia. It's a Russian question. Who is, first of all, you're going to say false ego. Well, false ego is a state of polluted consciousness. It's not a person as such. So how can it be a friend or a husband? I don't know. Maybe I have to learn to speak Russian, and then I can understand more of this unusual question. Yeah. Yeah, another question here.
There are some verses of Srimad Bhagavatam that are called Jobots by Prabhupada. Can we speak about these verses? They're very interesting, he says, and we can discuss.
There are certain verses in Bhagavatam in which there are no purports by Prabhupada. Can we speak on them? Well, all the verses of Bhagavatam are glorious and worshipable, the general etiquette is that verses which are not commented by the acharyas, we don't lecture on them. Although there's no, any verse can be quoted.
How can we serve our parents, how can we both serve our parents and make spiritual progress?
How can we both serve our parents and make spiritual progress? You can serve them in relation to Krishna. Ask them to chant Hare Krishna. That will help them. That will help you. Give them Krishna prasadam. The best way to serve parents is to ourselves be ideal devotees, and then they'll be delivered, even if they're not devotees themselves. Of which the prime example is Prahlad Maharaj, whose father was the antithesis of bhakti. But because of Prahlad's devotion, he also received the blessings of Lord Nrsimhadev. So give them prasadam, ask them to chant Hare Krishna, speak to them about Krishna consciousness as much as possible. Every circumstance is different. I don't know the exact circumstance of your parents and your relationship with them. But try to give them Krishna consciousness, and that's the best way to serve them. And of course, there may be other ways. On the bodily platform, parent is a bodily relationship. There are such things as helping them in their old age with their physical functions. And so on. You can benefit them by not giving them money if they're going to use it for alcohol and meat and all this kind of thing. If you give the money to build a temple in Moscow instead, then they'll get more benefit. In fact, they won't get any benefit at all if you give them money for meat, nor will you. Just the opposite. What is considered service according to the ordinary understanding is quite a different understanding when we understand the position of the soul in relation to Krishna. Nevertheless, devotees are not neglectful of material responsibilities inasmuch as they do not impinge on our spiritual activities, nor do they avoid material responsibilities on the pretext of bhakti. Some may say, well, now I'm a devotee, so I don't have to do anything for my parents. Well, that's not necessarily true. If one is a devotee on the level of Srila Prabhupada, who left his family, but then he spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, well, that... Or Ramanuja Acharya left his wife, and then he made such a contribution to bhakti. But if one is simply avoiding family life on the pretext of bhakti and doesn't do any significant service, that's not very good.